Pawns of Chaos by Brian Craig. Narrated by a Border Prince. Chapter 12. The assassin came out of nowhere. Regan Balbereff was descending the staircase towards the foyer of the headquarters of the Adeptus Terror of Sigmatus, in what was supposed to be a completely safe environment, when the Aborigine suddenly appeared at the foot of the stairs and started shooting. Perhaps he would have succeeded had he not started shooting quite so soon, before taking proper aim, but it seemed likely that he had not had adequate opportunity to practice using the weapon. It was not so very uncommon in Calisandra for Aborigines to possess and use stolen guns, but they lacked the training opportunities. Even so, the assassin got a 4-shot before one of Balbereff's bodyguards put him down, and one of those shots lodged in the thigh of the second bodyguard, who had been quick to do his duty by serving as a human shield to the Chief Inquisitor. Balbereff's first thought, as he watched the gunman collapse, was that it was as well that what passed for the Adeptus Terror on Sigmatus had contrived to maintain a proper measure of loyalty and discipline. Had his bodyguards been less than fully committed to his protection, one of them would have surely been bribed by now to do Orlok Malkarth's dirty work. As things were, Malkarth had to rely on the aboriginal petty criminals to serve as triggermen and kitchen staff or cleaners to get them into a shooting position. There would have to be an investigation, however, time-consuming it might be. The rat within the walls had to be identified and annihilated, after proper interrogation, of course. Malkarth was too careful to leave a trail that might lead back to him, but an example had to be set. There was, of course, a possibility that the assassin hadn't been sent by Malkarth, and that he really was a local anarchist with a grudge against everything imperial. But Balbereff had always found it politic to assume the worst until he was presented with proof to the contrary. While servants hurried to help the wounded man and summon a doctor, the bodyguard who had shot the would-be assassin knelt beside the dying man, demanding to know who had sent him. Having checked that the bullet wound in his protector's thigh was unlikely to be fatal, Balbereff followed the other man down the stairs. He knew that it would be futile to question the gunman. Even if the failed assassin had breath enough to answer, which was unlikely, given the size of the hole in his chest, he would waste it in a brief exultation of spite. In all probability, the man wouldn't have the slightest idea that he was Malkarth's cat's paw, even if that was the truth of the matter. He probably thought that he was a good servant of the revolution, working for the destruction of the Imperium, and he might be right. Even Balbereff had only the vaguest idea how many of the supposed revolutionaries were really spies, because he could only make an educated guess as to what proportion of the infiltrators were Malkarth's rather than his. He did know, though, that the whole movement would be tidied up in a matter of days, if it were ever in the interest of the Imperial community to do so. One of the few points of strategy on which he and the Governor were wholly agreed, however, was that carefully managed and subtly manipulated opposition was a far more useful political tool than a much smaller organisation that really did operate in secret. "He's dead," the bodyguard reported. "Never said a word." "Anything on him?" Balbereff asked, as the bodyguard began to search the dead man's pockets. He was certain that the answer would be negative, and so it was. "Word of Agio's breakthrough must have leaked out," the bodyguard opined. "They know that if we can establish contact with the fleet, everything will change." He carefully didn't speculate who that might be. "Shall I double guard in the Psyker's quarters?" "If you can be absolutely certain of the new men," Balbereff said. "And I mean absolutely certain. Even the strongest minds are apt to become agitated down there. It's a duty that requires exceedingly strong nerves." "No problem. I'll get the best possible replacements for poor Makiri too. Do you want to wait until he gets here?" "No. I've got to see Malkarth now." Balbereff stood up as he spoke and moved towards the door where his car was waiting. "Is that wise?" "It's necessary. Anyway, the so-called palace is just about the safest place in Calisandra. He couldn't afford to have anything happen to me there. He thinks he has enough support to make himself ruler of the world, but he knows how fragile some of that support is. He can't afford to let the rumour get around that he cares far more for his own personal glory than the safety of the Imperial community." "It's getting around anyway," the bodyguard said, as he held the car door open for the Chief Inquisitor, looking round all the while for further dangers, of which there were none. "It's a pity," Balbereff said as the bodyguard took his own seat and closed the door so that the driver could get underway, "because I'm not sure that we can afford a split in the ranks at this point in time, any more than he can. If we can't re-establish contact with the Imperium, We may need to win this war in Gul Zarkandra, and if we can, we need to be able to persuade the real tech priests and inquisitors that we're worth saving. What we need is to rein Malkarth in and make him see sense.
No reprisals then, the bodyguard said.
We don't even know for sure that it's him, Balbrev said tiredly. It's not as if we're short on enemies, is it? The Aborigines hate us more than they hate the Governor's Guardsmen and the army, because we're the ones trying to exterminate their foul religion. They don't understand the kind of war we're fighting.
It was only a short ride to the Governor's Palace. It would have been easily walkable, but custom dictated that the masters of the Imperium didn't walk. They were the true men, citizens of the galaxy still, despite the fact that they had been out of touch for 7 generations. Walking was for Aborigines. As the elevator rose to the floor where Malkarth's offices were, Balbrev hoped that he wouldn't have to go out on that damned balcony again. He didn't like Malkarth playing with him, even knowing that he was vulnerable to being played with. One day, he thought, Malkarth would lean out just a little too far and lose his footing. But not, of course, while the Chief Inquisitor was standing next to him, or even in the building. Now was not the right time, but times changed, sometimes rapidly, and if Diageo was right, they might be about to change very dramatically for the better. Within a week, if only the warp storms would condescend to become dormant for long enough, Sigmartus might have a real planetary governor, and the importance of its Chief Inquisitor's loyalty and determination would receive due recognition at long last. Orlok Malkarth was not on his balcony. He was at his desk entertaining other guests, 3 of the army's senior officers and a Vox caster operator who must have delivered fresh news from the front. The expression on their faces told Balbrev that the news was not good.
What went wrong? He asked. Operation Probe, replied Major General Vorch succinctly.
That brought a frown to Balbrev's face. Operation Probe had not been his idea, but its presumed necessity had been based on intelligence provided by his psychers. The vision in question had been unfortunately vague, but it had seemed adequate to establish the tactical importance of a certain hill west of Odin. The decision to take Odin and hold it as a supply depot had been taken independently, but once that was in Fulbright's plan, the desirability of occupying the alleged significant position without delay had seemed clear.
The cultists have occupied the rock already, Colonel Balliol put in. Fulbright's men must have ridden straight into an ambush.
There was more than a hint of accusation in his tone. Military men who had no understanding of the problems of dealing with psychers could never quite come to terms with the limitations of the intelligence Balbrev and his fellows were able to gather. Having been warned that the rock might be important, Fulbright's men should have been alert to the possibility of an ambush.
What were they ambushed with? Balbrev asked combatively. Field artillery? Assault rifles? We don't know, Vorch admitted. There don't seem to have been any survivors to report back. Something nasty. Something horrible.
He meant magic, but he couldn't even bring himself to pronounce the word.
If there was no one to report back, Balbrev said, faking a contempt that he was not quite able to feel, we have no reason to assume that it was anything out of the ordinary, do we? It must have been, Vorch retorted somberly. They were good men, travelling light, but well enough armed against any foreseeable contingency. Even if it was something horrible, Balbrev said, its use will cost the enemy dear. This might be a setback, but we have to press on regardless. It's a fact that we're fighting to destroy something horrible. That makes it absolutely necessary to fight this war and win it. We have to send the aircraft now, so that Fulbright can make use of it.
The Chief Inquisitor is right about this being a setback, Orlok Malkarth put in swiftly. But it's not serious. We've lost a handful of trucks and 30 men, but we can take it on trust that they didn't die easily. They must have inflicted some damage on the enemy.
It leaves the position at Odin weaker than we could have wished, but it would have been weak anyway, given that the locals managed to poison them well. The incursions to the north and south have proceeded much more smoothly. Our casualties are insignificant, while the enemy had already lost thousands.
Thousands of ill-armed peasants, Barbara thought. The first real battle had yet to be fought.
But General Fulbright is still asking for air support, isn't he? He said doggedly. The refueling points are all in place. We should dispatch it without delay.
Malkarth casually ignored the statement, as if it had been a mere suggestion of no importance.
What news do you have, Chief Inquisitor? He asked instead, looking Balbrev straight in the eye.
If he knew that there had been an attempt on Balbriff's life, he gave no sign of it.
"Ships of the Imperial Navy are definitely nearby," Balbriff said boldly. "They are certainly aware of the situation on Sigmatis. If the abatement of the warpstone continues..."
"Are you telling me that you actually got a message through to the fleet?" Melkarth wanted to know.
"Have you begun a dialogue?" "Not exactly," Balbriff had to admit. "What we seem to have contrived is to eavesdrop on a few relevant exchanges within the fleet's internal communications. We're trying to establish a telepathic link, but the warp storm..."
"It's still a barrier, and might become impenetrable again at any minute," Malkar finished for him. "We can't afford to wait, Chief Inquisitor. We have to press on with our own plans. We've been isolated for 200 years, and we can't pin all our hopes on the possibility that the isolation might end soon."
"You certainly can't," Balbriff said to himself, silently. "But I'm not sure that I have any alternative."
Aloud, he said,
"We can't ignore the possibility either. If the warpstorm does remain quiet, the fleet commanders will have to decide whether it's worth their while trying to help us. It would be a risk, because they wouldn't know how soon warpstorm activity will increase again, or how violent it might become. If they think we're beyond help or undeserving of it, they might decide that the safest course of action is exterminatus."
"I can't believe that," said the Major General, bluntly.
Balbriff realised that it was perfectly true. Vorch was literally unable to believe that the Imperium, the real Imperium, of which this one was but a feeble and distorted echo, was in the business of obliterating whole ecospheres, making no discrimination at all between Chaos Worshippers and those who opposed them. To men like Vorch, the Imperium of mankind was a distant memory, preserved in a set of stories handed down from his great-great-great-great-grandparents, more speculation than history. Vorch thought of himself and men like him, in which category Vorch presumably included Iris Fulbrer and Orlok Malkarth, as the Imperium, and took it for granted that his own notions of authority and strategy were universal. The inner core of the organisation that was still proud to own such names as the Inquisition and the Adeptus Terror was the only place on Sigmatis where accurate knowledge and true faith still survived. Alas, the twisted mind of Orlok Malkarth, who would prefer that contact with the real Imperium was never resumed, was not so very remarkable in a community which strayed so far from the path of righteousness.
"Our task," Malkarth said smoothly, "is to oppose the forces of the enemy with all our might. To do that, we must win this war, swiftly and completely. I don't suppose, by any chance, that you have any more information to offer about this mysterious rock in the wilderness? Our men are dying out there."
The last thing Balbriff wanted was to make Malkarth's support any less fragile than it was.
"I'll do what I can to obtain further intelligence," he promised. "But the tech priests and inquisitors accompanying General Fulbrar may be better placed to do that, especially if we can capture a few of what the Aborigines call wise dreamers. If you were to send the aircraft..."
"If Operation Probe hadn't gone so badly awry," Vorch said in a vexed tone, doing Malkarth a service whether he knew it or not, "we might have been better placed to capture a wise dreamer or two without exposing our men to undue risks." "Nobody expected this campaign to be a walkover," Balbriff pointed out. "However inflated the reputation of this Gavlon the Great may be, he is as powerful as he is vile. We, who are pious and virtuous men, can have little or no idea of what horrors he might be able to unleash. No matter that we have been cast away on this pustulant planet, we have right on our side. We were always going to take losses on this campaign, and we always knew that those losses might be heavy. That's why we waited until our forces were strong enough to be irresistible. My people would do their utmost to help with the primary assault, but the real work will begin afterwards, when we have to root out every remnant of chaos worship throughout the continent. That will be a long and uphill struggle, unless we can obtain reinforcements from the Imperium. If we can get those reinforcements soon enough, we might be able to cut General Frubra's anticipated losses drastically. That's what we all want, isn't it? More than anything else, we want to save the lives of our soldiers and make the work of our priests that much easier. Which is why I have to continue trying to make contact with the fleet, and why every small success in bringing that end closer is worthy of celebration, and why we really ought to send the aircraft to Gulzakandra without further delay."
Balior was already nodding agreement to the main points of the speech, and Vorch's expression had softened considerably. Even Orlok Malkarth had to make a show of approval, no matter how determined he was to not take up the final suggestion. Balbriff had begun to understand that Malkarth wanted the aircraft for himself,
and that made him determined to make sure, one way or another, that he didn't get it. "You're right, of course, Regan," the governor said. "But let's not put all our eggs in one basket, shall we? General Fulbright will do everything he can to figure out why Operation Probe went wrong, and what the implications are for the next phase of the battle. We do need to know what the enemy has in store. It's not as if Gulzekandra is like Kalizandra, with a spy on every street of every town. And if the reports from Odin are anything to go by, even our best interrogators will find it hard going extracting useful information from the local peasants, whose stupidity is only exceeded by their stubbornness. We're relying on the Adeptus Terror, Regan. We need you now more than ever before." Malkar's insincerity was palpable. It was easy enough for Balbrev to imagine the governor adding, for his own ears alone, "And once we're through with this campaign, we'll never need you again." He knew, though, that the Imperium would need him again. If Chaos were to be annihilated rather than subjected to a merely temporary defeat, the rulers of Sigmartis would need to maintain the strength of its remnant of the Adeptus Terror, and its strength of purpose too. And what the local relic of the real Adeptus Terror needed more than anything else was a healthy injection of new strength and new purpose from the real Adeptus Terror, the backbone of the Imperium of Mankind. It would be foolish, Balbra thought, even to try to redirect D'Agio's attention from authentically important matters to such trivial questions as who or what had ambushed Operation Probe, and why a lump of rock in the desert seemed to be of some tactical significance to Gavilon, the so-called Great.
"If you need him so much," Balbrev said grimly, "it's a pity your police force couldn't stop a native with a gun getting into my headquarters this morning. One of my bodyguards took a bullet that was meant for me."
Major Vorch and his junior officers seemed genuinely shocked, but it was hard to believe that Malkoff's pantomime of horror had any genuine sympathy in it. Balbrev couldn't believe that it had, even if Malkoff hadn't actually been behind the assassination attempt.
"The cultists still have agency in Kalizandra," Malkoff observed. "Until their organization loses its head, we'll never be able to obliterate them entirely. But once Gulzekandra is ours and this Gavilon is safely dead, along with all his disgusting followers, the underground will wither away. Once victory is ours, we'll be able to sleep safely in our beds. Would you like me to lend you some men to reinforce your bodyguard, Regan?"
"I'd be only too happy to help."
"I can take care of it," Balbrev said dryly. "I can take care of everything. Depend on it."
"I will," Malkoff assured him insincerely. "We all will."
"I'll bring the fleet here, or die trying," Balbrev told himself firmly. "You can ignore the possibility if you want, my dear governor, but you won't be able to ignore the ships when they come down. And then we'll see who can take care of themselves and who can't. All praise to the Emperor Magnificent, and death to all his enemies, whoever and wherever they may be."